2:04 p.m. I'll turn it over to you, sir.
Good afternoon. My name is Owen Egan, and I am the chairman of the Freedom of Information Commission. This is the regular meeting of the commission, March 24th, 2021. Before we begin, I'll take a roll call in alphabetical order so that the record reflects who is participating today. When I say your name, please indicate that you are present. Commissioner Barrett. Commissioner Chavez. Commissioner Einhorn.
Present.
Commissioner Giuseppe. Mr. Hankins. Mr. Shaw. Mr. Streeter.
Here.
Mr. Winkler.
Here.
And myself, Chairman Owen Egan. Thank you. This meeting is open to the public and is being conducted telephonically due to the COVID-19 pandemic. It will be recorded in its entirety. For everyone participating in today's meeting, please remember to identify yourself first for the recording each time you are called to speak. All participants are expected to conduct themselves in a respectful manner at all times and not to interrupt the commission deliberation. If the commission believes any person's conduct is disruptive, that person will be placed on mute at the direction of the chairman. Further disruption may lead to that person's removal from the telephonic meeting. When the commission conducts a vote, it will be by roll call. I will conduct the roll call. The first item is consideration of the minutes of the commission meeting of March 10th, 2021. Do I hear a motion?
Mr. Chairman, this is Commissioner Streeter. I move adoption of the minutes of the commission's regular meeting of March 10th, 2021.
Commissioner Winkler, I second that.
Okay. We'll ask all in favor, and I'll do this by roll call. All in favor, Commissioner Barry, Mr. Chavez, Commissioner Einhorn.
Yes.
Mr. Fusashi.
Yes.
Mr. Hankins.
Yes.
Mr. Shaw. Mr. Streeter.
Yes.
Mr. Winkler.
Yes.
And yes for Owen Egan. Motion carries unanimously. The hearing officer's reports are all publicly accessible on our website through the links on the agenda for today's meeting. The website is www.ct.gov/FOI, and you can find that through the links on our agenda. So I will call the docket. If you are part wish to address the commission on a particular docket number, please let me know when I call it, and we will mark it ready. We will take up the cases in the order that they are called. First is Kevin Kelly versus Commissioner, State of Connecticut Department of Insurance, docket number FP2016-0638. This is withdrawn. Is anyone there on that matter? Mr. Kelly, are you there?
Mr. Chairman, nobody is anticipated to appear for this case today.
I would entertain a motion.
Mr. Chairman, this is Commissioner Streeter. As you mentioned, this was withdrawn and dismissed. I move adoption of the hearing officer's report.
Commissioner Winkler, I second that.
Is there a discussion? Hearing none. All in favor, I'll take a roll call vote. Commissioner Barry. Mr. Chavez. Commissioner Einhorn.
Yes.
Oh, sorry. I'll back up. Commissioner Chavez?
Yes, I vote yes. I just wanted 2 minutes late, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Commissioner Einhorn?
Yes.
Mr. Fusashi?
Yes.
Mr. Hankin?
Yes.
Mr. Shaw? Mr. Streeter?
Yes.
Mr. Winkler?
Yes.
And myself, Owen Egan, yes. Motion passes unanimously. Next is docket number FIC 2019-0161, De Leon versus Chief Police Department, City of Bridgeport et al. Is there anyone here on Would you like this marked ready?
Yes.
We'll mark it ready. Is there anyone there from the City of Bridgeport?
Yes, Dina Scalo here for the respondent.
Okay, thank you. We'll mark that ready and we'll take it up in appropriate order. Next is docket number FIC 2019-0599, Michael Sinnott versus building official, Town of Stratford, et al. Is there anyone here on that matter?
I'm here. I'm here on that, Michael Sinnott.
Do we mark that ready, Mr. Sinnott?
I'm ready to go.
Okay. Is
President, Your Honor, Alfred P. Bruno of Birch and Moses for the Town of Stratford.
Okay, thank you. We'll mark that ready, sir.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Next is docket number FIC 2019-0725, Jacqueline Hudson versus Principal Martin Kellogg Middle School, Billington Public Schools, et al. Is there anyone here on that matter? Jacqueline
Hudson. Yes, there is. Sarah Gleason from Shipman and Goodwin for the respondent.
This matter was withdrawn. Do you wish to be heard?
No, sir. We're just here to make sure it's dismissed.
Okay. Is Jacqueline Hudson there? All right. I'd entertain a motion.
Mr. Chairman, this is Commissioner Streeter. As was mentioned, this is withdrawn and dismissed. With no objection from the respondents, I move the hearing officer's report for adoption.
Commissioner Winkler, I second that.
Made and seconded. Is there discussion? Hearing none, I'll take a roll call vote of those in favor. Commissioner Barry. Commissioner Chavez.
Yes.
Mr. Einhorn.
Yes.
Mr. Fuseschi.
Yes.
Mr. Hankins.
Yes.
Mr. Shaw. Mr. Streeter.
Yes.
Mr. Winkler.
Yes.
Myself, Chairman Owen Egan, yes. Motion passes unanimously. Next, docket number FIC 2020-0109, Catherine Sandry, Chairman, Town Council, Town of Prospect, et al. Is there anyone here on that matter? Okay. I'd entertain a motion.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, this is Commissioner Streeter. Not seeing anyone present, I move adoption of the hearing officer's report.
Commissioner Winkler, I second that.
Motion's been made and seconded. Is there discussion? Hearing none, I'll take a roll call vote of those in favor. Commissioner Barry. Commissioner Chavez.
Yes.
Commissioner Einhorn.
Yes.
Commissioner Fuseschi.
Yes.
Mr. Hankins.
Yes.
Mr. Shaw. Mr. Streeter.
Yes.
Mr. Winkler.
Yes.
And Owen Egan, yes. Motion carries unanimously. Next is docket number FIC 2020-0154, John Celio versus Chairman, Senior Housing Commission, Town of Sherman, and Town of Sherman. Mr. Celio, are you there?
Yes, I am.
Would you like that marked ready? Sherman.
Frank Costetis, Chairman of the Senior Housing Commission, former chairman.
We'll mark that ready.
Yes.
Before we consider the cases, I will ask Executive Director Lee Murphy to please make some general. Attorney Murphy.
Sure. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. As has been previously stated, this matter is being recorded in its entirety. There is no need to request that any individual matter be recorded. We will have the full recording for you. And second, pursuant to our regulations, oral argument is 10 minutes per side, and I'll keep track of that for the parties.
Great. So we'll take up the matters that have...
Mr. Chairman?
Yes.
Mr. Streeter, here. If I could just interject that I know that Commissioner Chavez joined, we had just voted on the minutes. I wasn't sure if she wanted to put a vote in or on that matter or not.
Commissioner today, wish to hear your vote to adopt the minutes.
I do vote in favor of adopting the minutes as they were circulated.
Thank you.
Thank
okay,
you.
Thank you. Thank you, Commissioner Streeter. All right, so next we'll take up the matters marked ready on the docket. First is docket number FIC 2019-0161, Rachel De Leon versus Chief Police Department, City of Bridgeport, et al. Are you there, Ms. De Leon?
Yes, this is counsel for Ms. De Leon, Alexa Millinger.
Thank you, Attorney Millinger. And is someone there from the City of Bridgeport?
Yes, Dina Scalo here for the respondents.
Would you like to begin,
Attorney Scalo? Sure. At this time, the respondents are present, but they do not have any objection to adoption of the hearing officer's report, but will be available for oral argument if the complainant wants the oral argument or if the commission has any questions.
Thank you. Ms. De Leon?
Yeah, and we also do not have any objections to the proposed report, and we are here should anything come up, but we are fine with accepting the report as is.
Thank you, counsel. All right, I'd entertain a motion.
Mr. Chairman, this is Commissioner Streeter. Seeing there's no objection from either the complainant or the respondent, I move adoption of the hearing officer's report.
Commissioner Winkler, I second that.
Is there discussion? Hearing none. All in favor, I'll take a roll call vote. Commissioner Barry. Mr. Chavez?
Yes.
Mr. Einhorn?
Yes.
Mr. Kuzeshi?
Yes.
Mr. Hankin?
Yes.
Mr. Shaw? Mr. Streeter?
Yes.
Mr. Streeter?
Yes.
Commissioner Winkler?
Yes.
And Alwyn Egan? Yes. Motion carries unanimously. Thank you.
Thank you.
I think Commissioner Shaw's there.
Oh, yes, Mr. Shaw, did you vote in favor of that matter?
I did vote, but I will vote in favor.
Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, this is Commissioner Ryan Berry. I'm on by phone.
Okay. Did you wish to vote in favor of matter of Mr. Sinnott?
Senator,
Rachel De Leon, excuse me. Senate, I guess. Senate.
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 I would vote in favor of it.
You know what? I think.
Pardon. I did read it.
Leon's matter. Rachel De Leon.
Yes.
All right. You're voting in favor? Thank you.
Yes. Please. Thank you.
Did you wish to adopt the minutes as well?
Yes. That was at the last meeting.
Thank you. And Commissioner Shaw, did you vote in favor on the Rachel De Leon matter?
No, I did not vote that, but I will vote at this point. I just got it.
Okay, so you'll vote in favor of that?
Yes.
And then do you wish to adopt the minutes from the last
yes.
meeting? Okay, thank you. Next is docket number FIC 2019-0599, Michael Sinnott versus building official Town of Stratford, et al. Are you there?
I'm here.
Okay, and then is there someone from the town of Stratford there?
Their attorney was on the line. I don't know what happened to him.
Attorney for the town of Stratford there, please.
Yes, sir.
Identify yourself, please.
Alfred P. Bruno for the building official, town of Stratford.
Thank you. All right.
Thank you.
Matter was Senate, would you like to begin?
Yes, I would. If you're going to dismiss my complaint,
it's hearing officer, we're hearing it now.
Yeah. All right. Well, you can dismiss it if you want, but if you do, it's going to be based on the testimony of Brian Donovan, the building official. And we have to look at the kind of person that Brian Donovan is if you're going to give him any credibility.
Hold on a second, sir. This is an appeal from a decision that was rendered by a hearing officer, Attorney Felicia D. Harmon. you need to identify what portions of the hearing officer's report you wish to challenge. So what would you like to challenge in her report? We don't need any personal attacks on anyone.
Well, all I can say is that I'm trying to do this without attacking the man because he's well.
The report, sir. There are numbered paragraphs there.
Here.
Which paragraphs do you disagree with? Why do you think the hearing officer failed to do her job and find in your favor?
I'm looking at it now.
You can come in.
Hi, Don Lowe. I'm on here now.
Well, I can't fault the hearing officer because of she has done her job correctly, I suppose. But I will say this. I filed paperwork with the Secretary of State to run for mayor. This will become a campaign issue. And about 30% of the people I've talked to already in campaigning for mayor have told me that they know people the same thing has happened to them, although Brian Donovan maintains that I'm the only one. So, Brian Donovan has a vested interest in making sure that these documents I want to see never see the light of day, because when I find the other people this has happened to, I'm bringing a federal class action lawsuit against the town of Stratford. It would have been easier if I was able to see the documents I wanted to see, but I realize now they'll never see the light of day. That's all I have to say.
Okay, thank you. Does the town of Stratford wish to comment?
I would like to comment, Mr. Chair. First of all, Mr. Brian Donovan has a stellar reputation in the community and does a wonderful job on behalf of the town. He's a 16-year veteran as a building official, and what Mr. Sinnott is stating is somewhat slanderous. But what we would ask for is that the dismissal of the complaint as recommended by the hearing officer be approved, and the town can move on from Mr. Sinnott's statements that are not accurate.
Mary, but one thing there, if I may. Brian Donovan, in order to get a search warrant, had to see a Superior Court judge. He used information that the United States Supreme Court has ruled cannot be used. He threw a temper tantrum and turned off my electricity. No, let me. He turned off my electricity.
Mr. Sinnott, this is not a podium for you to attack someone, render political speeches. You requested records. The hearing officer denied your request. You have a right to attack the hearing officer's report. Challenge it based on the law and tell us why you legally believe you're entitled to those records. You told us that you don't have anything to say. Is there something you would like to say about the hearing officer's report? We really don't.
Fine.
Okay, thank you. We're not interested in the accusations about things that the building official did or didn't do. We need to know about the records that you requested. So you don't have any.
Opposing counsel is able to say that Brian Donovan's reputation is stellar. He has a reputation for being a fool.
I think he was responding to your attack on his reputation. So
I haven't even started yet, trust me.
Yeah. Is there anything you'd like to say about this report, sir? Anything
no,
else?
No, I'm done.
Okay, thank you. Is there any discussion from any of the other commissioners?
Not at all.
Okay, I'd entertain a motion.
Mr. Chairman, Commissioner Streeter, I move adoption of the hearing officer's report.
Mr. Winkler, I second that.
Motion's been made and seconded. Is there discussion? Hearing none, I'll do a roll call of those in favor. Commissioner Barry?
Yes.
Mr. Chabay?
Yes.
Mr. Einhorn?
Yes.
Mr. Tudeschi?
Yes.
Mr. Hankin?
Yes.
Mr. Shaw?
Yes.
Mr. Streeter?
Yes.
Mr. Winkler?
Yes.
And myself, Owen Egan, yes. Motion carries unanimously. Thank you, Mr. Senna. Thank you, counsel.
Thank you, sir. Thank you very much.
Goodbye.
Thank you. town of Sherman. Are you there, Mr. Cecilio?
I am.
Okay. And is your attorney, is there an attorney there for town of Sherman, or is it another representative?
Don Lowe here, first selectman of Sherman, is here, and I believe Frank Kupsidas from the Housing Commission is with us also.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Excuse me, Mr. Chairman, this is Attorney Harmon. Before you pass it over to the parties, I have two suggested corrections, if I may.
Please.
Okay, in paragraph 22, I referenced January 27th, 2020, two times. That date should be January 20th, 2020. So we need to change the 27 to 20 in that paragraph. And then in paragraph 24, I would recommend removing the first sentence and just leaving the second sentence there. So paragraph 24 would just start, accordingly, it is concluded. It won't change, neither of these corrections will change the impact of the recommendation, but it will just make it more accurate.
Thank you. I entertain a motion on those two amendments.
Mr. Chairman, this is Commissioner Streeter. Per the request of the hearing officer, as non-substantive changes, I move that we amend paragraph 22 to change the date from January 27th, 2020 to January 20th, 2020, both locations, as well as in paragraph 24 to remove the first sentence.
Commissioner Winkler, I second that.
Is there discussion? Hearing none, I'll take a roll call vote on the amendment only. All those in favor of the amendment, Commissioner Barry?
Yes.
Commissioner Chavez?
Yes.
Mr. Einhorn?
Yes.
Mr. Fuzeshi?
Yes.
Mr. Hankin?
Yes.
Mr. Shaw?
Yes.
Mr. Streeter?
Yes.
Mr. Winkler?
Yes.
And Owen Egan, yes. The amendment passes unanimously. All right, so the parties are still there. I would like the town of Sherman to please begin.
The town of Sherman accepts the findings of the Freedom of Information Commission that we have made.
Identify yourself, please.
My name is Don Lowe. I'm the first selectman of Sherman.
Okay. So the town of Sherman, Mr. Lowe, accepts the hearing officer's report as amended?
As amended, yep.
Thank you. That's yes, right?
I'm sorry. Yes, yes, we do. We accept it as is. And I have no further comment.
Thank you. Mr. Cecilio?
Yes, this is John Cecilio. I understand the hearing officer's recommendation and accept them because filing the FOI, I was able to acquire the requested information after the Stark State arbitrator became involved and that the committee learned that they need to follow FOI guidelines. So I accept the hearing officer's
Thank you. Excellent. All right. I would entertain a motion.
Mr. Chairman, this is Commissioner Streeter. Seeing there's no objection of the complainant or the respondent, I move the amended hearing officer's report for adoption.
Commissioner Winkler, I second that.
Motion's made and seconded. Is there discussion? Hearing none, I'll take a roll call vote of those in favor. Commissioner Barry?
Yes.
Yes.
Mr. Einhorn?
Yes.
Mr. Fuzeshi?
Yes.
Mr. Hankin?
Yes.
Mr. Shaw?
Yes.
Mr. Streeter?
Yes.
Mr. Winkler?
Yes.
And myself, Chairman Owen Egan, yes. Thank you all. I appreciate your attendance, Mr. Cecilio, and those representatives from the town of Sherman.
Thank you very
Thank
much.
You. Thanks. Bye-bye. So then next we move on, Attorney Murphy, to the consideration of the Supreme Court opinion in the City of Meriden versus Freedom of Information Commission. Would you like to take it away?
Yes, Mr. Chairman. Before we get to that, I'd just like to further clean up the record and see if the commissioners who joined a little bit late, there were a few other matters that were voted on, and I just want to see if they want to cast their votes in favor. These were uncontested cases. The first one, Mr. Kelly's case, 2016-0638, then 2019-0725, Hudson, and then 2020-0109, Catherine Zandri. So I believe those were adopted potentially before Commissioners Barry, Shaw, and maybe Chavez came on. I'm not sure, but just want to check on that.
So do you want us to do it one at a time?
Sure, maybe ask each of them if they'd like to cast their votes in favor.
So, Commissioner Barry, would you like to cast your votes in favor on all three of those matters?
Yes, I would. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Commissioner Chavez, would you like to cast your votes on all three of those matters in favor?
I believe I already did, but yes, my vote is yes on all of them.
Thank you. And Commissioner Shaw, would you like to cast your vote in favor on all three of those matters?
Yes, I would.
I'm sorry?
Yes, I would.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay. All right. So we will turn our attention to a loss that we just sustained in the Supreme Court in the city of Meriden versus FOIC. I will turn it over to Attorney Harmon, who valiantly argued this to the Supreme Court. But, you know, just by way of background, this is the case, if you haven't had a chance to read it, where there's less than a quorum of agency members meeting. And the question is whether that meeting is a meeting under FOI. And the court certainly gave us some parameters for that going forward. So let me turn it over to Attorney Harmon, and I'll pitch in if needed.
So this is Felicia Harmon. I argued this to the Supreme Court. Just to bring everyone back to where we were, the appellate court had construed the first definition of meeting in section 1-200 subsection 2, which says a meeting means any hearing or other proceeding from a public agency. The appellate court had ruled on the basis of consulting legal dictionaries, and this is what they said after consulting legal dictionaries, on the basis of our review of these definitions, it is clear that the ordinary meaning of the terms hearing and proceeding allude to adjudicative activities. They went on to say the more proper reading of that subsection is that a hearing or other proceeding refers to a process of adjudication which falls outside the scope of activities conducting during the leadership gathering. So remembering how the appellate court had defined that provision is important, because even though we lost the case, the Supreme Court said, in reviewing the appellate court's decision, and I quote, in consulting only legal dictionaries, the appellate court did not recognize that public agencies conduct other types of hearings or other proceedings that do not have adjudicative functions associated with them. As such, we disagree with the appellate court's restrictive reading of hearing or other proceeding, which would circumscribe the applicability of the Act's open meeting requirements to adjudicative activities. So I recommended that we move the court to take this case, petition for cert, which they gave us, they took it up, and they did remove that very restrictive construction of the term proceeding. What they said in reviewing going forward from there is that in order for a group like the leadership group, which is, four members of the city council of the city of Meriden, plus the mayor and the city manager, in order for the commission to say that that gathering is a proceeding and thus subject to the FO, all the requirements of the FOI Act, this is what the court wants to see. For a gathering of individuals who are members of a public agency to constitute a hearing or other proceeding, it must be comprised of individual members of the public agency who have expressed authority to take action on behalf of the public agency. So while we were able to get the court to loosen up the definition of proceeding, which I think is very important, when we look at these cases going forward, if we believe that we have a subset of a public agency taking on responsibilities of the agency proper, we really need to drill down into how that smaller group started to meet, under what authority they're taking action, because the court's going to want to see a delegation. And in fact, they want to see that the analysis for proceeding would very much be in line with the analysis for a subcommittee, that there's been this delegation of authority to this smaller group. But what we don't have to have is an adjudicative activity. We can have an activity, when we're hearing, when they're deciding something, that would be for the public agency to decide. When they're hearing from members of the public, which would be something that the agency proper would usually do, we can still say that that's a proceeding because of the definition they chose. In this case, in the commission's final decision, we never really got to how the group was formulated. I think the hearing officer had said that at least implicitly it could be a subcommittee in its own right. But the court, and I think there's two footnotes that are really important, footnote 6 and footnote 7. Footnote 7 goes through the express authority that the court wants to see in order to say that this proceeding should have been subject to the full force and effect of the Freedom of Information Act. But footnote 6 tells us that we can also, we named the City of Meriden and the City Council as respondents. And I think when we're hearing these cases and we see that there's this small group of folks that are part of the agency proper and they're conducting this, these types of activities, we really need to stop and amend the case caption to name the actual smaller group, so add them in as a respondent, because in footnote 6, the court says the parties have not specifically analyzed whether the leadership group of the City Council itself constitutes a public agency, although I asked I petitioned for cert on that basis, but we didn't have that analysis in the final decision, so the court didn't accept it. So, and they go on to say, given that the plaintiffs in this action are the City Council and the City of Meriden, the court couldn't take the opportunity to consider whether the leadership group in its own right maybe was a subcommittee of the City Council. So I think we get some direction. We get a better definition for the phrase hearing or other proceeding. And, you know, we need to really focus in on how these groups came into being so that we can find that express delegation to these smaller groups. And then I think we'll be all set. I was disappointed, but it wasn't a total loss. We did get the court to really pull back on the appellate court's definition was so rigid and so strict because lots of things that public agencies do are not adjudicative, and that was very concerning to me. So, best efforts. That's it. Thank you.
Thanks, Felicia. And I think your point is well taken about that definition, and I know you spent a lot of time trying to get a broader definition, and so you're right. We did achieve that. We're hopeful that this won't be a loophole. I do think that agencies do meet this way, that there are, you know, I'm aware that there are these leadership groups, so we will have to think about this if the next case comes and see if we can pinpoint these elements that the court directed us to look at. So,
Mr. Chairman? Mr. Yeah. Streeter?
Yes,
yeah,
Mr. Streeter.
All right, thank you. But I mean, I sort of take exception that people are thinking that everybody's trying to go through a loophole here. I stand by that I've been in the minority this entire time because I voted against it time and time again moving forward because I have municipal experience. I did these. I was in hundreds of agenda meetings over my 14 years on the town council in South Windsor, and even if it is just a member of the majority party, some sort of action of the full body. And, you know, that's, I guess that's what I will continue to use my, what I would consider the, my common sense, which is obviously different than everybody else's, and everybody has their own opinion. But, you know, I stand by the judgment that having a group of people that are coming together to talk about what the full body is going to do is not a deliberative hearing. That's, you know, they still have to go forward and take the votes. And it wasn't always, you know, there is no agenda subcommittee, at least in South Windsor. It was usually, you know, somebody from the majority party, somebody from the minority party, the clerk of the council, and the town manager. So it's really just to sort of vet what comes up in this term, next meeting. I know there were other issues that came up for the city of Meriden, talking about, you know, the hiring committee and all that. But, you know, I just don't want us to be, like, putting so many people under the microscope, because we feel that people are trying to exploit some sort of loophole when we start getting into what is not even a subcommittee of the whole. It's just, you know, something to do with the procedures. I know that our own commission has sort of been called out by some of our frequent flyers for how our agendas are put together, and that meetings of the staff are somehow public meetings, and we know they are. Because it's, you know, this is how the, in order for us to have these type of meetings, there has to be some procedure to get an agenda put together and put forward so that the whole body has it. So I do, you know, commend the staff, and particularly Attorney Harmon for fighting vociferously. And obviously, I would have, however it came out, I agree with. But I just want to state that, you know, this is how I sort of felt from the beginning that that we may have been going down the wrong path. And, but again, thank you, staff, for fighting hard on this. And obviously, you know, we'll see how things go forward. Hopefully this shakes a lot of people to realize that certain things can't be done in less than a form. So, thank you.
Commissioner Einhorn, I have a question, if I may. So, I'm not sure I totally agree. And one of the things that concerns me is that in many parts of Connecticut, the majority party not only sets the agenda, but has the power actually to control the final decisions, not that anything has been delegated to it. And this is based upon specifically my experience in New Haven, where long before I was on the commission here, what would happen in New Haven, and I can't remember the name of the case, was that not only was there an agenda meeting, which is fine, as Matt says, but the one party holding the agenda meeting would invite speakers who happen to be not members of the body, but in fact people who might be giving testimony and expected to enforce something, but certainly someone who could speak to the agenda committee, which would be essentially a caucus, about the decision. And again, I can't remember the name of the case, but this board, this commission, has always found that that's improper. And it should be improper because, again, I disagree with Mac, because in many parts of Connecticut, if you do have a majority at an agenda meeting and to the exclusion of the other party, that that caucus is able to call upon other city officials to address it and ask questions. It's also a private public hearing. It's a private hearing on issues, which shouldn't happen. It gets wholly contrary to the FOI. So the question I have is, and I don't know the answer to this, but does this new decision impact that? In other words, if you have an agenda committee, let's call it a caucus, and they start inviting city officials to the meeting, again, a meeting that doesn't include the other party or other members of the deliberative body, is that now allowable under FOI? Does this case raise that?
Colleen or me?
Either way, you or Colleen.
But the caucus committee, I agree with both commissioners. To the extent that it's an agenda-setting meeting, I think that it you know, is fine.
Right.
What happened in this case is that it went, I think, way beyond agenda setting and started to talk about, you know, they're trying to put together a personal search committee for a new town manager, and they're talking about things that went way beyond creation of a personal search committee. They're talking about, they're deciding on candidates. They're talking about whether they have criminal histories in their background, whether they pay their taxes on time, whether there's diversity in the committee. So the creation of the agenda was part of that leadership group, but it went way beyond that and really got into the substance of people and experience and things that I think the public would want to hear.
Were there other members there? Felicia, were there at this meeting, were there other members there besides members of the deliberative body that were setting the agenda?
The mayor was there and the outgoing town manager were there. So if this had been a caucus, they wouldn't have been able to have people come in, right?
Right.
So a caucus has to be strictly the people in the caucus.
Right.
So what we had here was four members of the city council and then the mayor and the outgoing town manager. So that would have blown up any caucus because you can't have outsiders come in. But I think both points are well taken. I mean, if we're just saying creation of a personnel search committee, and we're saying, how about consideration of Felicia Harmon and Joe Smith, and we're just naming people to be talked about at the open meeting, I think we're good. But if we start digging down into, oh, no, take Felicia Harmon off because she doesn't have any experience or she doesn't pay her taxes, if we're starting to talk about the substance of the people who are going to be considered, I think we're pulling things from the agenda. Putting things on based on a substantive discussion. And that was the point. Not that Meriden has a bad history. It's just that these meetings seem to go beyond mere, you know, simple agenda setting. And so I think that's why we petitioned the court to take a look at it.
Oh, yeah, I remember.
So, I mean, I agree with both commissioners. I think agenda setting is great. And if you're just coming up with an agenda, that's fine, but when you start to substantively make decisions about, you know, who's going to be on certain committees and who's off and that's all behind closed doors, I think you're moving from deliberations and substantive discussions, you're moving away from simple picking of items to put on the agenda. So
I guess it's the word delegate that bothers me.
They want to see express authority. They want to see the agency proper authorizing this smaller group to conduct agency. Because to tell you the truth, the selection of a new town manager was expressly by the town charter. It was the responsibility of the city council to choose the new town manager. So in a way, we were close because we're putting together a personnel search committee in private, and that personnel search committee is going to go look for that town manager. In the creation of the personnel search committee, we're having substantive discussions about folks who should or should not be on that personnel search committee, and the public's not seeing that. And then after they made all their, you know, had all their discussions about whether this person should be on or that person should be on, then they stepped back from that, from all those decisions. And remember, this was going on a consent calendar on the town council's agenda that never got discussed. In the history of the town council, I don't think anything on the consent calendar ever really had any discussion whatsoever. But when they figured out who they wanted in private on this personal search committee, then they had a whole discussion about diversity. And, I mean, these are things that go, I think, beyond just the selection of items to be placed on an agenda. I think the public would have really benefited from hearing the discussions about how people were selected and maybe came away with, like, wow, this is going to be a really good personal search committee because of the way the people were so highly scrutinized. That all happened behind closed doors. And I think that it's fine to select items for discussion at a meeting, but I think these were pre-digested in a way.
Less worried about the case or the facts in this case, and I'm more worried about the implications of this decision in terms of the future, really. And in particular, I suppose, cities which are controlled by one party. So that's my concern.
The tricky part is when the Supreme Court said that the only thing they could see in the record was that the city council had knowledge of the leadership group. So they knew they were meeting, but they didn't authorize it. So there's the problem, right? I mean, if they're just meeting to create the agenda and the city council knows about it, then that's not going to rise to the level. They want to see the city council saying, this is something we're supposed to do, but you folks go do it. And when you do that, you basically create a subcommittee anyway. So it's really going to be very fact-specific. And as hearing officers, we need to step back when we're hearing this kind of a fact pattern and say, maybe I have to look at how the leadership group was created. Maybe I need testimony from the leadership group itself. Maybe the leadership group should be named as an additional respondent so we can really get our hands around the creation of these smaller groups.
Thank you.
I'll just add a little further, and I think I'm with Felicia. I agree with both of you, commissioners. But I think that there is a bit of a slippery slope going from agenda to substantive decision making. In prior cases that we had on this point, and we don't get them very much, but you know, a charter revision commission, that they were stumbling in their public meetings, so they, you know, they took a break, and the leadership group, you know, went off and came back and hammered out what the charter revision recommendations were going to be. And it was, you know, not expressly authorized, but when they came back, that, you know, the revision that they brought forward was adopted without any discussion. So that's, I guess that's, you know, my fear, that we lose the public dialogue, that if it's, and if, without express authority, which you're probably not going to find, it's probably going to be difficult to find that. But everybody kind of knows that that's what happens when the leadership group goes off to, you know, work on a matter. So I think that's, you know, that's where the concern is, that items have the potential to be rubber stamped and that you kind of take the public out of it for consideration. But, and just one thing with regard to Meriden, certainly, you know, none of us intend to disparage Meriden in any way. I think if I referenced that, it was that there had been a prior case that Meriden lost on this issue. And, you know, that we felt like, well, they lost on that issue. How come in this case, you know, they're trying to bring it forward again? They should kind of know what our rulings are. And the Superior Court had upheld us in that case. So I think that's where that came from. So
I guess my fear is, and I won't keep going here, but my fear is that based upon this, we're gonna see more of these issues arise. But I know the charter revision concept you're talking about, but it also occurs in more politically sensitive areas such as redistricting. And very much so in redistricting, where you have political issues where one party may well go off in the corner, take testimony from somebody or another, hire their own expert, do whatever, and then walk back in with the votes to do whatever, make whatever redistricting changes should be done. So it is a slippery slope, but I am worried about the implications of this case. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay, thank you, Felicia. Then we get to move on to item number 4, which is a Superior Court decision in Lauthert versus FOI Commission. And this has this matter is, I think, on a second remand now to the commission. And we did just learn today that Ms. Lauthert has asked for reconsideration of the decision, even though it was remanded to us to do some more work on it. She has sought reconsideration. So I'm going to just ask maybe Paula if she could give us a short, if possible, background on this one for you.
Good afternoon, everyone. So this is a case that goes all the way back to 2015. It involves the allegations of the notice or secret meeting of the Fulton Board of Education. The court was found part in our favor and then part remanded to us. So the court upheld the commission's finding that there was no evidence in the record that an unnoticed or secret meeting was held of the board itself. However, on appeal, the plaintiff also alleged that her initial complaint that was filed with the commission was against the board chairman individually as a single member public agency. That was an issue that was really never raised with the commission, so it wasn't addressed by the commission. And the court has now remanded it to us to consider whether or not such allegation was actually fairly raised, and if so, whether there was a violation just by the board chairman individually as a single member public agency. The court also ordered the commission to review some records that had been submitted in camera for the purpose of determining if there was any evidence that was a secret notice meeting. Unlike other cases that we've had, those in-camera records were not submitted for the purpose of determining whether they were exempt from disclosure. It was just really to see if there was anything in those records that would provide evidence of a notice of secret meeting. We made that argument on appeal, or I made that argument on appeal, what I stated to the court is, I don't think it's appropriate to review the records, those particular records, to determine whether they're exempt from disclosure, because that's not what was at issue. This wasn't a records case, it was a meetings case, and it would not be appropriate. The court, however, has remanded to us also for that purpose, to determine whether they're exempt from disclosure. It's unclear why. It was kind of just inserted in a footnote in the decision. Doesn't really provide a reason for why we should do that, but it is there. And as Colleen said, at this point, just today, Ms. Lowther has filed a motion for reconsideration. It just came in right before the meeting, so I haven't gotten a chance to really digest her reasoning. It did look at first glance that she's basing it on the Supreme Court decision that Alicia just reported on. So I have to take a look at what her basis is and then from there. I think that's about it. It really just goes back to the plaintiff believes that there was this unnoticed or secret meeting of the Fulton Board of Education. And we did get it back at one point, remanded back to us to take additional testimony, and even with that additional testimony, still found that there was no evidence of an illegal meeting. But now the court is asking, what's interesting is the court did not retain jurisdiction in this case, which would, if the commission decides to take it back, then there would have to be a new appeal by either of the parties, depending how the decision comes out. I don't know if you want to add anything more to Colleen.
Well, I'll just supplement very briefly that we had considered making a recommendation to the commission to appeal the decision, but on further reflection decided not to make that recommendation. Just the concern was that the judge allowed Ms. Lowther to add items to the record to sort of establish her position that seems to have, it's taken different paths over the course of these many years that this litigation has been pending. She latched on to this idea that there was a meeting of a single member public agency, whereas before it had always been going down the path of that the board had had an illegal meeting. And she was allowed to add to the record, which we feel is inappropriate, and then having the judge ask us to examine this issue that had really never been raised before the commission, that's our position at this point. But we felt that we would not recommend take an appeal, and that we'll take a look and see if we can issue a decision on this issue, basically mostly on the record that we have, but. There were some concerning things in the decision to us, but on balance, we don't think it's worthwhile to take an appeal.
Mr. Chairman, Mr. Streeter again. Yeah, just a question for Attorney Perlman. So it It's not an illegal, unnoticed secret meeting of the Board of Education. It's tact is now that it's an illegal, unnoticed secret meeting of a single member public agency. So it's the chairman has, every time she meets or he or she meets with herself, has to file an agenda for a meeting.
No, the plaintiff is alleging that that meetings between single member public agencies, such as the chairman and the superintendent, that those would be illegal meetings. And so that's where she's going.
It's not the board chair, because the board chair is not. You're talking that the superintendent is the single. But she's claiming that it's the single member public agency is the chairman of the board, which that wouldn't be the case. It would have to be the superintendent meeting with the chairman of the board, because the chairman of the board is not a single member public body.
Good luck sorting this out.
We do have some cases that under certain circumstances, in an administrative, if chairman is serving at an administrative capacity, that he could be considered a single member public agency. But what she's arguing is that he's not illegally meeting with himself, but any meetings of the board chairman with the superintendent or any other Wilton public officials that are not members of the board, that would be an illegal meeting also. But I still feel like what was before the commission, it's my opinion, and again, have to look at it again, that the complaint that we have, that original complaint that we had before us, was just against the Board of Education. But she's saying the way she delineated the respondents in her complaint, it was clear that she was also claiming a separate allegation just against the chairman, because there was some evidence that he had talked to the superintendent, and so she's saying that those perhaps were illegal meetings. But
thank you very much.
That's where we're going.
Are there any further comments from the commissioners? Okay.
Thank you, Paula, on that one. Yep. Next, pending appeals. I think that's enough on appeals for you right now. Nothing else on pending appeals. Move on to our executive director's report and, just share that we still are rolling out our video hearings, and we're hoping to have a meeting in the next week or so with all of the lawyers, to go over the instructions for doing those. And, my guess is that we'll be doing them by video probably by the end of April. We still have a sprinkling that we're trying this out on, and we're refining our processes. So I think that's going fairly well. And then in terms of the relocation of our offices, and now we have a firm date, I would say, of May 28th, 2021, which is a Friday. And we are really beginning now our preparations to move. And we've decided not to conduct hearings at the end of May and to cancel our last May meeting for the commission, which would have fallen on May 26th. So we won't have that meeting at the end of May. And but assuming our move goes smoothly, we should be able to resume hearings at the new location. I'll have to take a look at that, but I would hope maybe by the second week of June, and then hold our regular meeting in June as well. So it looks like we are going. Under staff reports, we've been reporting that our new lawyer is starting, and now it is around the bend till he's starting on Friday. So Zach should be on board for our next meeting, and I'll introduce him then to you. And we're preparing to post for Victor's vacant position at this point, and we'll be posting for a staff attorney 2 position. Let's see. I think that's it on staff reports. For our legislative report, Paula and our legislative team have been very busy with bills. I'll turn it back over to Paula for a few minutes on that. And there's one area that there are five bills pending on. They're the same topic, so I'll let Paula share with you on that.
Good afternoon again. So to date, we have submitted statements. Well, we're monitoring over 100 bills. We've submitted statements on 16 different bills and testified at 3 hearings on 8 of those bills. At the last commission meeting, I believe it reported that Colleen was testifying on several bills. Those included the proposals to decrease copying fees and to bring the definition of handheld scanner into the 21st century, and so that it would include telephone and telephone use and camera use. There was also that proposal to exempt from disclosure certain constituent contact information, and also to add to the category of the employees whose addresses are exempt from disclosure, the employees of the Attorney General's office. So, again, I believe I had informed the commission of that at the last meeting. As Colleen said, there are 5 bills on one particular issue dealing with the remote meetings. These 5 bills essentially extend the governor's current executive order allowing public agencies to meet remotely. 3 of these have been heard. One was heard last week by the Government Administration Elections Committee. 2 were heard just the other day by the Planning and Development Committee. And there are 2 more being taken up by the GAE Committee this Friday. The proposals themselves are similar. Well, some of them are identical. They're just coming out of the House. Others are coming out of the Senate. But it's really generally the same idea to allow the public agencies to continue to be able to meet remotely. At some point, the governor's executive orders will end. They'll expire. But agencies want to be able to continue to meet remotely. We've been working. There was one of the proposals came out from the governor's office, and we've worked with the governor's staff on language that would be agreeable. But as I mentioned, there are other proposals out there, and so we're hoping to be included among the group to come together to come up with some language that's workable for everybody. The 2 bills that are being considered on Friday by the GAE committee also include 2 proposals that just came out that would extend the statutory time requirements for filing and deciding FOI appeals, which currently exists. These time requirements are suspended under an executive order. And so this would extend that suspension of the filing deadlines and the decision deadline until the end of the year, until I believe it's December 31st. And then lastly, today, GAE is actually considering one of the proposals. We submitted a statement on it. We decided not to testify. It's the proposal dealing with the exemption of Native American cultural knowledge records. As I indicated previously, this deals with the repatriation process where Native American tribes try to provide evidence of cultural affiliation so that they can, I guess, retrieve or get back certain cultural artifacts and burial remains from entities that may have those artifacts in their possession. So this proposal actually comes out at UConn because UConn has a lot of those objects housed at a museum there. We have worked with UConn to narrow the language. The original proposal was quite broad, and they were proposing to put it in the FOI Act. We worked with UConn so that the language is not as broad, and it applies to just these very limited objects, and also we believe it's not going to be in the FOI Act. It's going to be put into a separate statute. And then I think lastly, the other bill that I had previously reported on dealt with expanding the current exemption from records dealing with the concrete foundations. Again, we worked with UConn on language to keep this as narrow as possible. In some ways it got expanded, but we still kept the expansion limited, and it is a temporal requirement, so at some point the records would be available to the public. I think I've covered all of them, Colleen.
Thank you. Yeah, there's quite a few things out there, and I'll say it now and say it at the end of the session, but our legislative team is really working hard. Paula, Mary, Kathleen, Danielle, Matt, Tom, and me a little bit here and there. It's been pretty intense session, and this remote environment is a bit challenging. And got to give a shout out to Paula, because she attended a hearing the other day where she waited how many hours, Paula, to testify. She tried to do other work in between, but she testified at about 9:30 maybe p.m. So we have to make judgments about just getting our voice heard and how much time to invest in it, but Paula stuck it out well beyond the time that I even asked her to. So appreciate the work of the team on that front. I think that's all we have. No new business. Unless you have any questions for us.
Any questions from any of the commissioners? I entertain a motion to adjourn.
So moved. Second.
Motion seconded. All in favor, I'll take a roll call vote. Commissioner Barry?
Yes.
Mr. Chavez?
Yes.
Mr. Einhorn?
Yes.
Mr. Fuseschi? Hankins? Mr. Shaw?
Yes.
Mr. Streeter?
Yes.
Mr. Winkler?
Yes.
And Owen Egan, yes. I want to thank everybody at the FOI Commission who did an excellent job today. That was very informative, and thank everybody who's attended today as well.
Thank you, Mr.
Chairman.
Have
a great day. Please be safe.
You too. Bye, everyone. All right, we got through some intense